All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW-2 type helicopter pilot in Vietnam 1969. We want to welcome you to our program today. I'm really excited to have you here. As we all know, June is Post-Traumatic Stress Awareness Month, and so we're going to be talking a little bit about post-traumatic stress today. I've got some great guests coming up talking about their programs and what they're doing to help veterans and other people that are suffering from post-traumatic stress. So make sure that you stick around for that. We've got representatives from USAA, Wounded Warriors Project, and we've got an author, Cindy Ross, who's written a book all about hiking as a treatment for post-traumatic stress. So I think you're going to find those very interesting. I'm going to get into that right away, but first I have to make sure that we thank our sponsors. And first of all, that would be Legal Help for Veterans. They specialize in veterans' disability claims. So give Legal Help a call at 800-693-4800. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. If you want to do business with the government or many corporations, you need to be a qualified, certified veteran-owned business. So for more information, go to their website. That's nvbdc.org. The Eisenhower Center, this is their After Impact program, goes beyond awareness campaigns and state-of-the-art imaging to help veterans, first responders, and athletes. They have residents. They have all kinds of different programs there for treatment of TBI, post-traumatic stress, and other traumas. For more information, go to EisenhowerCenter.com. The Lieutenant Colonel Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor. And finally, we've got U.S. Wings, manufacturers of the finest leather flight jackets in the world. For more information, go to uswings.com or give them a call at 800-650-0659. And while we're talking about U.S. Wings, we got to remind you to enter to win the flight jacket. That's right. We're going to be Top Gun 2 movie is coming out, and we are giving away a Maverick flight jacket every month. So next week, actually, during the benefits program, we will be drawing the winner of that flight jacket. So go to our website, veteransradio.net, click on the jacket and register to win. A great jacket, and it's a great opportunity for you. So let's get right into our interview. The first interview coming up, as I mentioned, is that June is Post-Traumatic Stress Awareness Month, and our guests right now are U.S. Navy Vice Admiral retired John Byrd. He's the USAA Senior Vice President for Military Affairs, and we've got a U.S. Army Lieutenant General retired, Mike Liddington, who is the CEO of the Wounded Warrior Project, and they're going to be talking to us about the continued threat of post-traumatic stress. So we're going to get right into that interview right now. Well, we're back here on Veterans Radio today, and as you know, June is Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Awareness Month, better known as PTSD. And here on Veterans Radio, as you know, over the years we've been talking, we've dropped the D. We think it just should be just post-traumatic stress. But according to a 2020 Wounded Warrior Project survey of the wounded warriors it serves, 83% report living with symptoms of post-traumatic stress, and 30% have reported having thoughts on suicide in the last 2 weeks. USAA is an organization founded by military for the military community to include active service members. So USAA is working with the Wounded Warrior Project and other nonprofit organizations to raise awareness of post-traumatic stress, its effects on veterans, families and resources and information. And joining me on the line right now is from USAA is United States Navy Vice Admiral retired John Byrd. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. Appreciate you having me and appreciate you taking the time to discuss such an important topic.
Thank you very much. And also on the line is United States Army Lieutenant General retired Mark Liddington. He's the CEO of the Wounded Warrior Project, and we want to talk about post-traumatic stress a little bit today and some of the things that both of your organizations are doing to help out our current generation of veterans. So let me go to you, Mike. Tell me about the Wounded Warrior Project. I know most of us are familiar with it, but what is it? What is your mission?
Dale, thank you. Our mission since 2003 has been to honor and empower our nation's wounded warriors. Today, we serve 190,000 wounded warriors and family members. in a variety of free programs that help them heal mind, body, and spirit. Center to all of our programs is treating veterans that have served in combat and are suffering from post-traumatic stress. And we have a variety of programs that do that. And we couldn't do it, obviously, without the support of USAA and many other, you know, giving Americans around the country. But it's an illness and an injury that really needs a lot of continued attention, because I think what we'll get to eventually today is, you know, overcoming the stigma with getting treatment is one of our biggest challenges. And we all know that treatment works. The key is getting veterans into the treatment they've earned through their military service and then helping them heal. And when they come out the other side of that treatment, they're then, you know, back to being, you know, the valued leaders in the community in which they were recruited from.
I think it's really important. It is the stigma of post-traumatic stress and the admission that you have a problem is probably one of the main barriers that so many veterans have. We know that generations of veterans going back to mostly starting, especially with Vietnam era veterans, there was a stigma of even being a veteran. And, many people in my generation didn't tell anybody what we had done, didn't even tell anybody we were in the service, because they had these assumptions that we were all Rambo characters, and which was difficult. And so when you finally do admit that you're having difficulty, sometimes, you know, weeks after you get out, sometimes years or decades after you get out, and you go for help, you know, sometimes we don't even know where to go. How do we start this journey to get us back to a place where we're, you know, where we can survive?
Yeah, I mean, for us, the key is connection, Dale. I mean, treatment starts with connection. That connection may be a battle buddy, a brother or sister in arms, somebody that served with you, or somebody in the community. And then once you make that connection, then, you know, the encouragement from somebody that has walked in your shoes to go get help is really the next conversation. I'll also tell you that this generation is probably a bit more amenable to getting help for mental health issues than previous generations. And we've worked hard, not just nonprofit organizations like ours and other community-based organizations, but our government, Department of Defense and Department of Veterans Affairs, have had a concerted effort for at least the last 10 years to try to overcome some of the stigma so that once connected, the warriors can get help. And the programs we have directly providing treatment for post-traumatic stress starts with a talk program. We have people on the phone every day, about, you know, 25 of them having 30-minute phone call check-ins every day with a warrior, just seeing how they're doing. We have other programs where veterans, young veterans, can get together in the outdoors. Project Odyssey, it's a program where a dozen warriors get together, male and female, sometimes just female, sometimes male, sometimes couples. They go do something physical like whitewater rafting or hiking or high ropes or you know, just different fun activities. And then at night around the campfire, they talk about their experiences, and we connect them with clinical care that's available at those retreats. And then really our top end program, our Warrior Care Network, is a program where we offer 2 to 3 week intensive outpatient therapy that gives Wounded Warrior Project alumni about a year's worth of treatment that they would otherwise get from the VA or from community providers. And that treatment includes individual therapy, group therapy, yoga, Tai Chi, nutrition, mindfulness, activities with the family. Families are included. Service dogs are invited. I mean, the results of that 3-week program are staggering, and you can't believe you can really treat PTS in 3 weeks, but we're finding that you can. And the achievements you receive in those 3 weeks are really lasting for a year, 18 months afterwards. And then connection with community-based programs to continue that treatment. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And really, for anybody that's listening to your show today, Dale, if you are in need of treatment, I mean, organizations like ours can certainly help.
I think it's, as I mentioned, just great what you are doing, what the Wounded Warrior Project is doing out there. We're talking with Army retired General Mike Linnington, and also on the line with us is Navy Vice Admiral John Byrd. So, John, how did you get involved with the Wounded Warriors? How did USAA get involved with them?
Well, Dale, thanks for asking. And again, thanks for what you're doing on awareness. USAA's had a long partnership with the Wounded Warrior Program because we recognize it, along with other organizations, are absolutely necessary. Personally, I'm a huge fan of the Wounded Warrior Program. I contribute, USAA supports. I think it's the exact perfect organization the United States needs to have. When I hear you reflect back on your experience and we think about how disappointing we were with the Vietnam veterans, the fact that we have organizations like the Wounded Warrior Project that take care of our veterans, and I don't just mean PTS, I'm talking about the whole thing. It's it goes to our national character on how we treat our veterans. And if we're going to have a successful all-volunteer force, it will not happen unless we take care of families of the fallen and those that are wounded serving our nation. So USA recognize that. We're an advocacy for the military community. While our mission is about financial security of the military community, we certainly understand what underpins that is family resiliency. And you don't have military family resiliency if someone is suffering from PTS. So when I'm hearing Mike discuss the care that they provide, it really warms my heart. We've come such a long way, and we come up such a long way because of organizations like Wounded Warrior Project. And I do believe it's having that awareness and then recognizing that the treatment has come so far over the last several years that it can be successful and then return that family, that individual, to being a resilient member of the community. And that's so important to us as an organization and what we do. So it's a natural fit for us, and we're proud to be a supporter of the Wounded Warrior Project and all it does.
Well, I think it's great what USAA has done since its founding years and years and years ago in trying to help veterans. And the Wounded Warrior Project is just kind of a big, giant umbrella over so many local programs that are helping veterans, and that, you know, as Mike, you mentioned, the idea is we have to get the word out that there is help out there for you. And, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'll just say for USAA, for their part, they've been our longest serving and biggest supporter since 2009, probably earlier. I've been a member of USAA, by the way, since I graduated from the military academy. But what they've done in the community support, as Admiral Byrd said, you know, it's not just Wounded Warrior Project, it's the other, you know, 100 organizations they provide that really bring us all together in the community, because in the communities are where the healing takes place. And USAA has been very generous in supporting our community-based activities, our Soldier Ride, our Carry Forward series. They're our national partner for the Carry Forward series, which is a series of 5K walks and runs that veterans can take part of. I mean, we couldn't do what we do without people like USAA and John Byrd and his team. And really, it does eventually, Dale, get down to what's being done in the community. And sadly, our communities didn't take care of our Vietnam veterans like they should have. But, you know, our Vietnam veterans are the staunchest advocates for treatment for young veterans in communities. And I'll just tell you, as a brigade commander going into Iraq and Afghanistan, our Vietnam veterans were the ones that came in and met with our younger troops and our leaders and told us what combat would be like. And, you know, thank God for them, because we really didn't know what we were facing until we had spoken with them.
I think that that's so important, of veterans helping veterans. You know, the various service organizations that are out there are just trying to, you know, the terminology, I guess, is, you know, we have your back when you're in the field, and these organizations like you and VFWs, American Legions, and so forth, we want to let people know that we have your backs now when you're home. We want to make sure that you get the treatment that you're entitled to or the benefits that you're entitled to. And, you know, through the financial support of organizations like USAA and some of the very wonderful organizations that are out there that are helping, you know, we're able to get to this generation, and you know, they go through combat so much more intense than people realize. You know, it's not that, you know, Vietnam or World War II or Korea were not intense. It's just that these people, these men and women, keep going back and going back and going back. And then, you know, because of the volunteer aspect of the thing, you know, we've got a quote that we use on Veterans Radio by George Washington that, you know, if we don't take care of our veterans, we're not going to have veterans. And I think through the Wounded Warrior Project and people like USAA, I think we are trying to do the best that we can. I got a little bit off track here. I wanted to talk about the post-traumatic stress that you, the Wounded Warriors especially, are focusing on because of, you know, June being Post-Traumatic Stress Awareness Month, because we're still losing too many veterans to suicide.
Yeah, Dale, that's exactly right. I mean, 20 a day is the VA statistic, and I frankly think that number is a little low. But sadly, only 6 of the 20 that take their lives, of the veterans that take their life every day, are even getting care from the VA. So the other 14, you know, rely on programs like ours and others, and there's a whole host of them across the country that help them connect and heal. And it's why, you know, the responsibility for integrating young veterans back into the community doesn't always land on the steps of the VA. The VA has an important part of that, obviously, in the healthcare and the benefits they provide, the GI Bill, the opportunities for, you know, employment and job training are all fabulous programs. But eventually, veterans, when they leave the military, they go back right where they came from. And how well they're received back in their community, and nonprofits that are, and faith-based groups and others in the community are really what help them, you know, not just survive, but thrive. And if we can overcome the stigma, as you talked about earlier, then, you know, encourage folks to get treatment, and then after treatment, you know, go bring other warriors with you. I mean, over my shoulder, you see this flag. Mm-hmm. Of one warrior carrying another. Well, at one point, every one of our 190,000 that we serve was carried off the battlefield in one form or another, either from a physical injury or an invisible wound. Our goal is to get these warriors, these leaders, healed and back into being, you know, leaders in the community. And we couldn't do that, you know, without a ton of support. USAA is at the top of that heap. And I think this month, although it is Post-Traumatic Stress Awareness Month, you know, every month should be a month that, you know, veterans encourage veterans and others reach out to veterans and see how they're doing and check in on them and make sure they're doing okay.
You mentioned all the things that you are doing. There's a local small organization here in the Ann Arbor, Michigan area called Warriors and Caregivers. And what their mission is that, you know, not only to take care of the warrior, but also to take care of those caregivers, because without the caregivers, the warrior is going to just be lost, you know, forever, unfortunately. And the support of the families is so important. And I'm sure that the Wounded Warriors, it sounds like you've already got similar programs going on around the country. And I just wanted you to touch on that for a minute, how important those caregivers, your families, your mothers and your fathers and stuff, to get them to understand. My story always is that my mom went through my father going through World War II, and then she went through me going through Vietnam, and I never even thought about the effect it might have on her.
We conduct about 5,000 events a year that bring veterans together, and those events are largely open to the families. And as you said, Dale, you know, if you can get the caregiver or the spouse or the family in support of that veteran's healing, it's always more effective. And our Warrior Care Network, you heard me talk about that. That includes family members as well. We have a program that provides in-home support for our most seriously wounded veterans called our Independence Program. That program serves about 700 veterans with significant to severe spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries, and other neurological conditions. And, you know, if we take care of the caregiver is also taking care of the warrior. Caregivers are called hidden heroes. We work closely with a couple different caregiver organizations. I venture to bet USAA supports many, many more than we even work with. But the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, you know, the Rosalind Carter Foundation, you know, the Warriors and Caregivers program you talked about up there in Ann Arbor. We have to think about the families as we talk about the veteran, because, you know, if you don't heal both, then, you know, you're subject to, you know, not being as effective as you could be.
Right. And, you know, and the goal of all of these organizations, yours, mine, and USAA's, of course, is to get these men and women back into the community, functioning as best that they can as soon as we can, because post-traumatic stress never really disappears. It's just a matter of how we can, you know, live with it on a regular basis, and, you know, whether we can not be overwhelmed by it. I think that the idea we're talking here is, one of the comments that I got was, you know, post-traumatic stress is treatable. Yes, nearly a quarter of people believe that post-traumatic stress is not treatable. They think that we're all going to be, you know, traumatized for the rest of our lives. However, there's evidence-based that there is treatment for post-traumatic stress, and there's so many different kinds of treatment that's out there, not just talking to a psychiatrist or a therapist or anything like that, but the idea of going on hikes or going on canoeing or going on motorcycle rides or pairing up with a horse, horses and dogs and, you know, other types of companionship. And I think that that's one of the other things, is that, because, you know, once we have that camaraderie that we all have, that when we were in the service, I think this generation is better at keeping those connections. Mainly, yeah, probably,
really,
you know, probably due to
social
the tech.
Social media helps, and honestly, Dale, I'm grateful we're approaching the backside of COVID isolation, because isolation is also a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Post-traumatic stress is a illness of avoidance, and COVID has exacerbated that avoidance and that isolation. And we have seen really sad statistics on the increased post-traumatic stress, depression, anxiety, drug use, alcohol abuse, suicidality, and even domestic issues from the isolation caused by COVID. So, you know, we're really working hard as we reopen up all of our programs last couple months, and now we're really increasing it now in June, to get warriors out in the fresh air, spending time with each other, and really, you know, encouraging them to get the individual treatment they need, but also lean on their cohorts and their battle buddies to realize that they're not alone.
That's the key word. I think they're not alone in this battle, and, you know, they're not expendable either. We're, you know, that's not being, you know, left on the, you know, the debris of war. You know, we want to make sure that they come home, and they come home safe, and their families are, you know, everybody moves on with their lives. It's so difficult. I was thinking, you just mentioned in the pandemic, and I know that the American Legion had their reach out and touch, you know, campaign where everybody was trying to contact everybody that they knew. Just to, you know, doing, we used to call it, you know, the elderly check, but now, you know, just to check on your veteran buddies to make sure that they're okay. Because as you mentioned, so many of them are isolated, and, you know, maybe they don't have the support system that many of us are fortunate enough to have.
Dale, I think I would add to something that you and Mike are talking about, and it's so true about this engagement. And we talked about the stigma from the individual to get help, which we need to overcome. You mentioned the misconception about whether or not it can be treated. We also know there's misconceptions, sadly, about how significant PTS is in terms of people acting out. There will be violence and all that. And so often that's not true. And so it causes people to not engage, not reach out and connect. And so it's important in this time of awareness that we make it clear about interacting with people with PTS, helping them to get help, understanding there is treatment. And then the other point I would pick up on, and Mike hit upon it, is, yes, the VA does a great job, but they can't do it alone. The care for our wounded warriors is significant enough, and our veterans writ large, that this has to be a public-private effort, nationally, all the way down, as Mike said, to the community. So I think it's important that we all look for ways and opportunities to participate in support of veterans that are wounded, PTS. And it's as simple as giving. It's simple as getting the word out. And there's many other ways to do it. You know, almost every community has some way. Mike mentioned faith-based. Certainly, that's a wonderful way to do it. So I think it's important that your listeners think about that and think about ways that they too can support. And finally, the caregivers. Yeah, there's a number of organizations that spend time. Mike mentioned the Elizabeth Dole. There's Strong Star Training Initiative, where they focus on helping caregivers, and it might call them hidden or the unsung heroes. That's exactly right. Without them, it kind of doesn't work. The wheels come off, because more often than not, they are the family members. So again, really appreciate that we get the word out about help, about the misconceptions, and getting these very deserving warriors the care they need.
Well, that's our goal too. That's our mission here at Veterans Radio, to get the word out. And I know that both of you have got busy schedules, and I want to thank both of you for coming on to Veterans Radio. Retired Vice Admiral John Byrd, USAA Senior Vice President of Military Affairs, and also a retired Army Lieutenant General Mike Linnington, CEO of the Wounded Warrior Project. I encourage our listeners to go to the Wounded Warrior Project to find out. Maybe there's something there that they can help you with as well. And, of course, if you want to get some really good insurance, you go to USAA. I want to thank you both gentlemen for being on our program today. I look forward to talking to you again in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dale. And, Mike, thank you for all you do at Wounded Warrior Project.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you, John.
Thank you. All right. We'll be right back after this message here on Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Sergeant First Class Donald Moyer threw himself on a grenade to save the lives of his comrades. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800. Moyer's platoon was committed to attack and secure terrain stubbornly defended by a numerically superior North Korean force in well-fortified positions. Advancing up the rocky hill, the leading elements came under intense automatic weapons, small arms, and grenade fire, wounding the platoon leader and platoon sergeant. Moyer rushed to the head of the faltering column, assumed command, and urged the men forward. Inspired by Moyer's unflinching courage, the troops responded, but as they reached the final approaches to the rugged crest of the hill, enemy fire increased in volume and intensity, and the fanatical foe showered the platoon with grenades. Undaunted, the group forged ahead, and as they neared the top of the hill, the enemy hurled a grenade into their midst. Moyer, fully aware of the odds against him, unhesitatingly threw himself on the grenade, absorbing the full blast of the explosion with his body. Although mortally wounded, Moyer's act saved several of his comrades from death or serious injury.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Live, live, live right there. You'll live, live, live right there. I'm telling you if you don't know.
I'm telling you if you don't know.
Something's coming down the road.
Something's coming down the road.
We call ourselves Last Patrol.
We call ourselves Last Patrol.
We come to bring our brothers home.
We come to bring our brothers home.
So here we are. We're back here on Veterans Radio today. And continuing with the theme of post-traumatic stress, our guest is Cindy Ross. And Cindy is a writer of a great book that was recommended to me by my sister-in-law. It's called Walking Toward Peace, and it is involved with veterans. It's another alternative treatment for post-traumatic stress. You know, on Veterans Radio, we've talked about horse therapy, and we've talked about role playing, and we've talked about immersion and so on and so forth. And I think this particular one is more healthy than some of the other ones we've talked to our guests about. So Cindy had her formal education at Indiana University. That's in Pennsylvania, folks. And she's also gone to the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, Philadelphia Fine Arts. She's a long-distance hiker, writer, author, educator. Whew, she's through-hiked, new word that I didn't know, through-hiked the entire 2,100-mile Appalachian Trail, the 2,600-mile Pacific Crest Trail, and as a single woman, it says, and later married with kids, the 3,100-mile Continental Divide Trail, making her a triple crowner. So, Cindy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale, for having me.
That's kind of, golly, that's a lot of walking.
Not if you take it day by day. There's a saying, anywhere is walking distance if you have the time.
Okay, right, yes, if you have the time. So what the book is entitled Walking Toward Peace, and it's the idea of helping veterans come to terms with their I almost said afterlife. It is an afterlife. After their military career is done, how do they make this transition, and how did you come up with the idea that this would help them out?
Well, actually, I didn't come up with the idea. My very good friend, Earl Schaefer, the first veteran that's profiled in the book, is really the father of long distance hiking. And he was walking off World War II. And he was the first person to ever hike the whole Appalachian Trail, which is the longest continuously marked footpath in the world, goes from Georgia to Maine. So they had just built the trail and said it was impossible to hike the whole thing without stopping. And Earl was supposed to do the trail with his best friend who died in World War II. So he came home and feeling really bad about everything, decided to do this in his friend's honor. And so he helped me become a writer, actually. He was writing his first book, Walking Towards Spring, and my first book called A Woman's Journey on the Appalachian Trail almost 40 years ago. So he started the theme of walking off war. And I guess echotherapy started about 10 years ago when people started looking at alternatives. You know, years ago, I'm 65, and I remember many, many decades when different schools and camps started bringing like juvenile delinquent kids or kids that were in trouble out into the woods. I mean, they coined it hoods in the woods, but you know, and I think a lot of the big cities brought them out there, and they had tremendous success with these kids who could focus, were making bad choices, needed to get out of the city. And they were probably the first to really, you know, use nature as echotherapy. But there's been tons of research in the last 10 years about what happens to your brain, not just your body, as far as health and fitness goes, because we've known about that a long time, you know, how important exercise is. But as far as how
it changes, in progress.
How it changes your brain is kind of new. And that's what's really helping these veterans.
I was interested in the Earl Schaefer story because of, you know, we don't know that much about how these men and women came back from World War II, because our parents never talked about it. You know, Dad was in the Coast Guard and so forth, but he never talked about how he was able to make the transition, if he ever was really able to make that transition. Because I was at a conference one time with a bunch of Military Writers Society, and we were talking about Iwo Jima, and I said, oh, my dad was on Iwo Jima. And then somebody else, oh, my dad was on Iwo Jima. And, oh, you know, like 10 of us had, our dads had somehow gone through Iwo Jima, either in the Marines or in the Navy and so forth. And we started talking about their behaviors. And we found so many similarities. You know, first of all, they didn't talk about it. Second of all, they might have drank a little bit too much, you know, were quiet about a lot of things and never really were able to open up. And in reading your book, The Walking Toward Peace, I see that so many of your sample people, I guess you can say, the people who contributed to the story have had similar experiences. Before they started doing the walking, they went through all of some of the traditional steps of trying to deal with trauma. And could you address that a little bit? Because that was something that really jumped out at me.
Well, you know, if a veteran is smart and cares about himself, he will get some help. And so a lot of these guys have already gone to the VA for help. And they get a lot of help there. You know, everything depends on which particular VA you go to and who's there and what they believe in and what kind of advanced techniques they use and, you know, cognitive behavior therapy. And there's just all kinds of great psychological therapy, but they are in love with prescribing meds. And some of these guys that left in Georgia to hike the trail were on up to 12 different meds, which no one's ever said they felt great on 12 different meds. They might not feel angry. They might not, they might be able to sleep through the night with their nightmares. They don't remember. One guy told me he took a pill for his nightmares. He took a pill so he could sleep, and then he had to take another pill so he could forget his nightmares. And it's like, oh my God. And that's just a sleep problem. But about one of my vets in the book said after 800 miles, he was able to wean himself off all of his meds. Some of these guys that are out there for 5-6 months, they're not going to get off and go back to their VA to get new scripts. And so they just wean themselves off the drugs, but then find that being in the wilderness and walking and having that focus, they don't need them. And so a lot of them stay off of them then, but they have to put themselves out there. They go through a pretty rough time when they go off their meds, but they seem to be better without them. But it's replaced with the hiking and what happens to your mind from the exercise too.
I think one of the interesting things that I drew from the book is the idea of civilians. The regular population seems to have this preconceived ideas of what veterans are like. And, you know, from my generation, you know, we were all kind of these war crazed nut jobs that were out there doing all kinds of weird things and so forth. And even some of the more current ones, but, you know, the more current ones are not in the news that much because there aren't that many of them. You know, you're talking less than 1% of the population being in the military any longer. And these men and women are doing multiple deployments. And I don't know how they survive that. I just don't understand it. I have a nephew who is an Army Ranger, and he did 3 or 4 deployments, and he was in for 20 years. And his wife finally said, you know, you got to get out of here. You can't do this anymore. And but let's talk about some of these characters. The camaraderie is one of the main themes that I picked up in reading the book Walking Toward Peace by Cindy Ross, who's our guest right now, is that the one thing that so many of these veterans miss is that camaraderie. That, you know, these men and women that they trusted their lives with, and now suddenly they're not there anymore. Of course, they don't have the adrenaline highs anymore, and they're trying to figure out, you know, how do you cope with that? Some of them go, you know, take up skydiving or drag racing or all kinds of dangerous behaviors. I can relate to some of that. And it just takes a while. You cannot cure post-traumatic stress overnight.
Well, I don't think from what they've been telling me is, you know, you spend all the rest of your life trying to get back to who you used to be as far as a happy, peaceful person. They'll never be able to go back to who they were. And of course, they probably don't want to, because every experience you have in life changes you and you evolve as a human. And so you wouldn't want to toss stuff that happened to you just because it didn't feel good. There's a great book called Post-Traumatic Growth. And I really like the whole concept of taking those challenges and, you know, and the vets that were were deployed and were in combat seemed to me had the most challenges, and try to figure out how to turn that into growth instead of trauma. And you can do that. It takes a whole lot of work and insight and, you know, courage, but they can do that. And the thing about hiking, Dale, is that it's one of those exercises or activities where you have all this opportunity and free time to think. And this isn't the kind of ruminating thinking that they have, where they go over and over and over the same scenes, the same firefights, the same, you know, things that happen bad, trying to figure out why it went that way, why the buddy next to them died and not them, and what they maybe could have done better if they were, you know, in a period, in a position of leadership. Not that kind of thinking, but where it just kind of, for whatever reason, what happens to your brain is it stops that ruminating and obsessing over negative thoughts. It kind of diminishes that. And and that's so fatiguing mentally. And so it soothes your mind and boosts your creative thinking. And that in itself is healing. So that's why I picked walking, because they could, almost anyone could do it. And actually, there's a whole chapter in the book about a group of Marines who have compromised legs and can't hike or walk anymore. And so they ride adaptive mountain bikes. But mostly anyone who has their legs can walk. And so that is a really easy thing to do. To be into nature and nature doing that helps so much. So that's why I picked that. But they've had so much good luck of ridding themselves of their trauma simply by walking. And of course, everyone doesn't have 6 months to go do a long distance hike. And even an hour or two a day does tremendous benefits. So I wanted to make sure that I covered enough veterans in my book that hike for short distance too. But, you know, it's this whole way of looking at your trauma and turning it into personal growth. And you can think about that while you walk, subconsciously even.
Right.
I tell people, you know, I've had all this experience with long distance hiking before I even met a veteran that had trauma. And I used to tell people, you don't solve all of your problems, and the vets don't heal themselves and quote get better. But what you do is over time, you come to accept things. You accept your past. You accept yourself. You accept your decisions. You are reminded that you did the best you could at that time, and to move forward and have that, you know, gift yourself that gift to move beyond this past trauma and say, okay, going forward now, because the whole thing about hiking or hiking a long trail is your goal, which is what these veterans need. They need a mission and they need a goal. So all these things, I mean, it's so multi-layered, Dale, as far as it sounds like so simple. You're just walking, but there's tons of stuff that's happening to your mind and your body while it's going on.
Oh, sure. I can only imagine. I mean, I was thinking of you know, the people that I was reading about in the book, especially the, you know, not everything is uplifting in the book, folks. It's not all positive, because there's a guy who didn't make it. And that was Zach Adamson, and the who had done hiking and had done all these things, and his cadre of friends that were obviously traumatized by their experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think it was Afghanistan with that crew. And then they lose their friend here. And that, you know, I think that piled on the guilt a little bit for them and how they have eventually worked out. Could you talk a little bit about that group? I'm talking about Zach, Travis, Sean, and even Dan Stein.
Yeah, you know, the guys in the special forces, I'm convinced, have it the worst. The worst everywhere. The worst there, the worst here. Of course, you know, they wouldn't have wanted it any other way. They absolutely loved being Rangers and probably SEALs and all those guys. And they're a different kind of human, and because of it, they've got a different level of you know, of angst and trauma that they've got to deal with now, because everything was so much more extreme. And as far as Zach Adamson goes, you know, they talk about this whole reentry problem of a long distance hiker, because, you know, you're out there a long enough period, Dale, and, you know, of course, you're walking with everything you need on your back to survive. So material things and creature comforts don't exist. They don't matter. I mean, you might wish you had a bathtub every now and then, but you don't, and you can deal with it. So, you know, life is distilled down to its simplest, you know, ways to survive. And then you come back into society and everybody thinks you ought to do this and look like that and, you know, get rid of your beard and get a full-time job. And it's like, wait a second, I just had this incredible life-changing experience and you want me to take the piece of puzzle that I used to be and just kind of fit it back into the whole shooting match. And I can't do that. I'm not that same person. And the same thing happens to them when they go to war and they're in the military. And so it takes tremendous patience on your part and also your family and friends to allow you to figure out your life. And so Zach Adamson had a double whammy. He went right from his deployments onto the AT. And as soon as he got off the AT, the Appalachian Trail, after 2,100 miles, he didn't know what to do with himself. And, you know, winter came and it was stressful. And, you know, there's a piece in my book about why it's so easy for these guys to commit suicide. And I went to a big conference called Nature's Grace a couple of years ago, and there were 70 organizations that use the outdoors and nature to help heal veterans. And there was a man there that talked about, he stood up and he said, I want to explain to you why it's so easy for us to commit suicide. And he talked about how, you know, they're great at killing machines. They know how to do it. They're trained to know how to do it. And they're taught that, you know, save the last bullet for yourself and that you're expendable. And so they have a different outlook on life and death than we do. And when they're under so much pain, of course, it makes complete sense. They know how to do it and they're going to do it. So that just was amazing to me how much easier it could be for them to commit suicide than the normal person because of their training. And I thought, wow, no wonder you guys go there. You know, if they don't go there and commit suicide, I can't tell you how many of them I talked to said, we think about it a lot, like all the time, like maybe every day, you know, but we don't do it, but we think about it, which that shocked me too. So it's not that surprising to find out that just because Zach Adamson hiked 2,100 miles, he wasn't fixed. You know, they say that was the first 2,100 miles towards healing and he needed more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Travis, his gun captain, he's hiked all three of the trails too and hiked all over the world and then found a wonderful woman who loves and supports him, which goes, you know, leaps and bounds towards healing, and then transitioned into being an amazing firefighter, just off the charts service and his ability. And now, you know, it's got the high adrenaline, he's giving back, he has a sense of purpose. And so he has gone so far in his healing because of all those things. And so Zach just, you know, he just didn't stay at it enough. But it's not, you know, all the guys in my book have dozens of friends, some of them, that have come back from the war and killed themselves. It's just, I mean, the list is just forever. It's so disturbing and sad for them to lose their buddies here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's bad enough losing them there, but to come back and lose them here and not be there when they thought they should have, or not picking up on their cues, or not getting them out on the trail with them. I mean, there's just a million reasons why we think we should be able to save everybody. You know, I've lost guys in my nonprofit in the last 7 years. I can't believe how many I've lost. And, Even I had five guys Christmas Eve call me saying I'm done. You know, we're playing 500 Rummy, and I put my one buddy on speakerphone because I think he's calling to say Merry Christmas, and he's telling me he drank 2/3 of a bottle of moonshine and he's had it. And it's like, hold on there. You know, I'm going to leave the card game. We're going to have a talk and talk you off the cliff. I mean, my background's fine arts painting, and I'm a writer. You know, I'm just their storyteller. But because you get involved with people's lives and care about them, you are now that the only person they might have to talk them off the cliff, and you are not going to desert them at that time. So as far as Zach Adamson goes, he just needed more. You know, you just have to convince them to keep trying and not quit and go back into therapy or go on another hike or, you know, try to find some, you know, such a big part of their problems, Dale, is that, you know, they're on disability. They can't or they don't need to work anymore because they get some income from their disability. And so they have nothing to do. And after, you know, the longer they were deployed and the more extreme of their mission, they've got to have something important to do. They have to have a mission and they have to have people that need them. And how long can you survive if you feel that kind of hopelessness that there's nothing left for you? You know, we've encouraged guys to start being organic farmers. They've got wonderful veterans farming programs and things like, I mean, there's all kinds of things they could do, not for money, but just for purpose. But it takes a while to figure out, you know, what you love to do. What my one vet, he's in his late 40s. He's working as a veteran farmer, organic farmer, and just started growing mushrooms at this one place. And, you know, he never grew a leaf of lettuce in his life until now. And he's just happy as can be finding this new, you know, project and mission. But you have to gift yourself the time to figure your life out coming back from combat and coming back even from a long trail. It takes your whole life to figure out what your purpose is here.
Well, you know, like they say, you know, life is one big adventure and it just keeps, you know, it evolves. It changes daily. You never know what's going to happen. I'm going to need to have you back on, and obviously, because I want to talk more about these things. We've got about 3 minutes left. Could you tell me?
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
I just went off there, but you know.
No, but that's important stuff to know. Is that
it's such an important question, and it, you know, and it explains so many things. No, really. I mean, I wrote a whole book about it, so I could talk a little.
That's right. No, I mean, you can tell there's a lot of passion in this whole thing, in your love for veterans and that community, and how to help these young men and women who have been through so many things. One of the things I noticed in the book was you talked about, you know, non-white veterans and how they don't even know what the outdoors are like. In many cases, especially inner city, as you mentioned, while you were telling that story at the beginning, I was thinking of all those fresh air fun things that they used to have in New York when I was growing up. You know, get the kids out of the city, get them in, you know, out to, you know, to the lakes and so forth. And the kind of reluctance, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but there's one that you took out on a lake and he kayaked for the very first time. And he just thought it was the most awesome thing he'd ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really gratifying to be able to share that with them, you know. And when we work with the rec therapists at the VA hospitals, they always made them go around the campfire and talk and share what the last couple hours in the woods meant to them. And, you know, and invariably there's a couple of them that are crying and saying it was the best day of their lives. And it's like, guys, you can do this on your own. I do this every day. This is accessible. I'm so privileged to be able to show you this world, but I want you to go there. You don't need me to babysit you. I just want to open it up to you and then you access it. Take your family out, because all these, you know, their families are struggling with post-traumatic stress along with them.
Oh, so sure.
They all need to go out there. It's just unbelievable, the ability for nature to heal.
Well, I think that's a note I'm going to end on, is that nature can heal. We've been talking with Cindy Ross. Her book is Walking Toward Peace, and it's a great read. I recommend it to anybody out there, civilian or military. I think you can all relate to so many of the men and women that are in this book and the changes in their lives. For those of you that did grow up out in the country and you've moved to the city, go back to the country. Remember what it was like when you were a kid. Remember when you used to go catch salamanders. Remember when you used to, get lost out in the woods and your parents were ringing the bell and for you to come home and so on and so forth. So I encourage people to get this book and to read it. And where might they find it?
Any bookstore can carry it or order it. Amazon has it. If they want an autographed copy, they can write to me at cindyrosstraveler@gmail.com. My nonprofit's called River House PA, and they can look that up and see some of the programs that we do to help veterans, just for some background. But any place that sells books, they can find it.
Okay. Well, Cindy Ross, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. It's such a pleasure to talk with you about this story.
Thanks, Dale.
We want to thank USAA and Wounded Warriors for being on Veterans Radio today. And I want to especially thank Cindy Ross for being our guest also. Next week is our benefits program, so we make sure that you turn in. If you have any questions about the VA Medical Center or the disability payments and so forth, make sure you tune in. Also, make sure that you tune in to see who wins the jacket from U.S. Wings next week. So make sure you register for that. We're running up against the clock today, so we've got to say goodbye. Thank you all very much for listening. Until then, this is Dale Thronberry for Veterans Radio. You are dismissed.